something to tell me.
Right, okay, right. I know what this is going to sound like.
Oh, God.
But I feel like if anyone's going to probably understand it, you will. Right?
Okay.
I don't know if this is witch talk. Mental. I think it was hashtagged as witch talk. So we're just going to go with witch talk, okay?
Right.
And I came across a video on witch talk the other day. And it, for the life of me, I cannot remember the name of this stone, right? But it was all about this stone. And it said, if you come into contact with it, your whole fucking life goes to shit, right?
Oh, shit. What is it called?
Help me. Yes, I so feel like it starts with an M.
It's a green one. It's a... Not melodite, no, that's actually totally the wrong word. And that it's that green stuff, I know, because I've actually looked into buying it, so I'm like, I want my life to go into chaos, so then it's going to be better. I've looked into doing it, but it's like weirdly expensive.
Okay.
See, I know the stone. I
knew you would get me. I knew it. Okay, right.
Yeah. If it's anyway deranged, I'm going to know.
This time last year, literally this month last year, is when I got let go of my job because of COVID and everything went to shit. And I was like afraid to leave the house for 3 months. Nay, afraid to leave my bedroom for 3 months. It was a bad time. It was a shit time. And just before that would have happened, mayhaps a month before or so, we went to one of my favourite places over here, which is Blautopf. And it is this tiny little place that I have raved and raved on about to you because it's just so beautiful. So we go there a lot, right? Not a lot, but like we go there quite often.
You know, yeah.
Or we would have when we could go places. R.I.P. fun. We went there just before all that shit went down. And there's this little like tourist trap shop that sells all these little trinkety things. And there's a table of magic stones or healing stones or whatever the fuck you want to call them outside it. And every single time I go there, I go play with the stones because they're pretty. And I'm a magpie. Yeah. So
you did the same when we went to the fucking Cliffs of Moher, when we went into the fucking shop there.
I actually bought some there. I fucking adore them. I don't know why. But I always go, right? So I would have gone and would have played with the stones. And I'm like, what if I came the fuck into contact with that stone while I was there the last time? And my whole entire life went to shit because it did. My whole entire life fell apart in March 2020.
I mean...
But it says that a year later, you're in a way better position, right?
Which you are.
Exactly. I'm in a job that has an actual ladder I can climb to become, like, minorly successful. Like, it's successful enough for me. I'm not looking for much, okay? I'm not going to be CEO of fucking anything. But look, it's fine. I'm happy with it. I have money, again, which I did not have this time last year. I live in a way better house, as in my own house. So much more space. We no longer live in just like one bedroom and a makeshift kitchen and a bathroom, washroom, toilet combi. It was strange. It was fine, but it was a strange time and a weird place to be living. And if you remember, it was in chaos this time last year as well.
Utter chaos.
To the point where someone was going to kill somebody. Kind of chaos. So that, my living situation's improved, money situation has improved, my job, career, I guess, and let's not call it that, it's not really, it's just a job. But whatever, my progression is improving. I am in a much better situation exactly 1 year later from my life falling apart.
I'm not going to say, no, because, I weirdly, not that I'd be a massive believer in ooh, healing crystals.
Yeah, no, me neither.
But in a weird way, I'm maybe.
Yeah, but
there is some truth.
Exactly.
Do you know what I'm saying? But apparently, you do have to wear it. I don't know.
Really?
I don't know if that's not that's a thing. Because
it was a minute long TikTok, and it just said if you come into contact with it. So I don't know. But
no, it could be. I don't know. It's just any time I had watched them, they were wearing them on bracelets and on.
Yeah.
Apparently, it's meant to be a lot better. If you wear it on your neck because it's near your heart chakra and shit like that as well.
Mm.
Yeah, again, could be bollocks, but you never know. It's still
honestly,
it's very weirdly coincidental.
Yeah, it's I'm so 50-50. I'm like. Even when I watched that TikTok, I was like, oh, that's bollocks. And then I was like, wait a minute. And thus connected all the dots that I have just spent the last 4 minutes rambling to you about.
You're having a revelation.
Yeah, honestly, I felt like it was such an epiphany moment, and I was like, no, but what? But no, no, but what if?
Do you know what? I feel like we're fully in our right just to blame all of our problems on that.
Honestly?
So, like, if you have to, do. It's like, what fucked up your 2020? It was a magic stone. Like, sorry.
But it made my 2021 halfway decent so far. So.
Exactly. It's all about counterbalance, isn't it?
Exactly. I don't know how I feel about it. But that, yeah, that's my news. A stone may have broken my life and then magically repaired it a year later.
Refixed it? That's not a word, repaired.
Refixed it.
I'm so dumb. What is wrong with me? That's not even... not a word.
Listen, I'm here rambling about magic stones.
But it could be, like...
It could be. It really could.
There could be some truth to it.
How eerie would it be if your story somehow related to magic stones and healing and all that crack today?
I wish it did. But unfortunately, it's not. It's just full of misery.
So oh, good.
Like your 2020 was... It's completely depressing, but there's no turnaround in this, unfortunately.
Oh, fabulous. I can't wait to be completely bummed out at the end of this.
Well, the end, I'm going to, like, it's a bit of a whirlwind.
And ooh, whiplash, okay.
Like, not even, like, whiplash, more of, like, what the fuck? There's a certain video I'm going to reference, and I actually screamed because I found it so bizarre. Crazy. I can't. It's just...
Okay, well, I don't know about you.
Traumatizing.
But I cannot contain myself any longer waiting to hear this story now. So, let's dive in.
Wait, so do you remember last week when I was trying to give you all of these, like, massive hints that you weren't getting and I knew you wouldn't get as to what the trope is going to be?
Yes, I remember.
Right. Right, so all I'm going to say is, I'm like... Season 1, AHS, right?
Mm-hmm.
And with Ratched, right? They're kind of like interconnected. Do you remember how in AHS there was a fella that broke into the house while a bunch of nurses were living there and absolutely slaughtered a whole lot of them?
Oh
and
my god, the Ratched. Nurse murder! How did I know? I said I was going to be kicking myself this week.
You would, and I knew you would. I was like,
but so, Lizzie, so much goes on in a season of fucking American Horror Story.
I know, but still.
There was 10,000 murders in American Horror Story Murder House. How was I meant to know which one?
I mean, I feel like because I said Ratchet, I'm like, okay, she's going to get it now. But no. You let me down. I was hoping the memory loss wasn't going to be that bad, and you might
I did have a thought of the other way around. I thought it was like the Angel of Mercy thing, because like Ratchet was an Angel of Mercy, and then
do you know what? That wouldn't have been a bad.
Yeah, there was the two that killed everyone, but that was like the alphabet thing. But still,
yeah,
they were in a position to be an Angel of Mercy. They just didn't do it much for the mercy.
Yeah. Do you know what? That's also a fair guess. So I take back my attack. Also a fair guess. So I'm going to be covering one of the top contenders for America's biggest pieces of shit, Richard
Speck.
Oh, but
we have so many.
We have so many, but do you know, once you hear what this man has done, I'm going to say he's easy in the top five.
So unimportant, but his last name means bacon in German. I don't know why.
Does
that brings
it?
Me so much joy. Yeah. Except you have to say it with a lisp because...
No.
Fact number one about living
what
in Germany.
What kind of lisp?
Like Speck.
Or a...
Speck. It would be Speck in German.
I'm spitting now.
Spelt the same. S-P, but Speck.
Oh.
Yeah.
I'm kind of actually... No, I'm disappointed because bacon is delicious. And this man is not.
He's not delicious.
The fucking state of him.
Tried and not approved.
So, Richard Franklin Speck was born on December 6th, 1941, in a tiny rural town of Kirkwood, Illinois. Oh yeah, BTW Chicago, here we are. What are you lolling at?
His name is Dick Bacon.
Oh.
Right, I might be slightly delusional because I've had a very long week of work, but oh my god, that just brings me the most joy. Dick Bacon. Only
Dick Bacon.
Once we get out of the series phase, we're only calling him Dick Bacon after
Dick
that.
Dick Bacon. Shorts. I'm here for it. I'll take it. He was one of 8 kids, so he was the second youngest, and he was raised by an extremely religious mother and father.
Oh,
Benjamin,
yay.
And Mary Speck. We love those. Love them so much. Mary was a devout Christian, you know, and she took what the Bible said to be law. Like, there was no telling this woman any different. What God said, yeah, judge and jury, this man is fully right, right?
Okay.
And as a result, she projected a lot of her rules and expectations on her kids. Sure. So they couldn't so much as pull a toe out of line, or they'd be subjugated to endless hours of religious rhetoric. Like, couldn't swear, nothing. Even if they started boxing heads off each other, that's it. This woman came down on them like the hand of God, like, one would say insufferable.
I really like that boxing the head off of each other is your minimum requirement for getting in trouble.
Oh yeah. Like, sure, what else? Like, sibling scrapping, like, that is so, or such the norm. Like, the smallest thing can tick you off. Like, I remember Craig did something to me, like, when I was, like, a bit younger, and it wasn't even that serious, but I got that tick. I, like, threw a mobile phone at him, and it wasn't even that serious, so I can understand. Like, do you know, the smallest things could tick them off, so they bait face off each other.
This is true. This is very true.
And like most people from Kirkwood, Richard found his mother unbearable at the best of times, because even like within a tiny rural town where everyone was, you know, very religious,
she was a pain in the arse. Yeah, okay.
She was something else.
Ed Gein's mother.
Yes. Augusta. Exactly, yes. That's exactly who I was going to say, like, exact same vibes.
Fucking Augusta number two.
And so Richard became extremely close with his dad, Benjamin. And they actually did. They had, like, a lovely little relationship. Like, the two of them kind of became, like, best friends. Because I'm sure Benjamin was sick of Mary's shit as well.
Oh, definitely.
Do you know what I mean?
100%.
You could see it in his son. He's like, all right, I'll do your safe and fucking grace. So they used to, like, go out. They'd do little trips together. They'd go fishing. Like, I mean, literally two peas in a pod is what these were.
Like, fucking TV show dad and son relationships that...
Yes. Exactly, yeah. Like that, like, picture perfect. But when Richard was just 6 years old, his father died suddenly of a heart attack, and he was aged just 53. So it was like, it was completely unexpected. Like, this man was in, like, top health before this had happened, so they hadn't been expecting it at all.
He sounded Richard, like a good guy. R.A.P. Benjamin.
He was by every sense of the word. Like, he was a great guy.
Don't.
And Richard was completely devastated. Like, he, not only had he lost his dad, but his best friend. And with that, he just became such an angry child. Because like that, his mum wasn't really, like, she's left now with 8 kids, obviously.
Not
she's
a good
now
time.
Having to rear those 8 kids by herself in the early 40s going into the 50s. Like, that's not going to be easy. She's going to be away from home, so she's not going to be there.
Allowed work then?
After World War II, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, that's one way to tell it, I mean.
Yeah, we were.
Yeah, fair.
She had to have them working in the fucking factories and everything. So.
True, the factories, so the sewing, the fucking secretaries.
The bullets and shit.
What am I saying? Silly me. Okay, fair enough.
So she wasn't really there to keep his behaviour in check.
Mm-hmm.
And even when she was there, do you think
she was actually going
to fucking listen to her at all? And it only worsened when Mary married a travelling insurance salesman called Carl Lindenberg in 1950. And I mean, by every semblance of the word, this man was a bollocks. Like, he...
Oh, for fuck's sake.
He was a prick.
This so really is, like, a bad fairy tale.
Yeah. Oh, it's treacherous. Yeah, absolutely.
Like, the abusive and stepdad, the religious mother.
Travelling insurance salesman.
Yeah, but get a real job.
Get away. Like, ew.
Loser.
No, thank you.
At least do something interesting, like a travelling sweet salesman.
Oh, yeah, like fucking
Pecan Prince.
Or not Pee-wee.
Not Pee-wee.
I meant to say Dean. It's the pea and the pecan fucked me up.
The pecan.
Carl was a violent alcoholic, and he also had a criminal record for various DUI offences and fraud. So it's an unusual match for Mary, considering, like, she couldn't stand people swearing. Benjamin, when he was alive, God bless him, wasn't even allowed to drink, wasn't allowed to smoke. Let alone,
the power,
like,
of Christ and prayer, I shall save him.
I hope that was her reason. She's like, okay, I'm going to try fix this man. Going to try. And
I feel like definitely.
Definitely, yeah. But I think as well, maybe Carl had hit, or not hit, he did hit, but he hid a lot of what he was like until he was trapped in a marriage with Mary, because, like, if she was a devout Christian, divorce is off the table initially. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's going to be no hope of it. So once they did marry, well, he was free to be whatever the fuck he liked in front
of her. This is very true, yeah. That is actually 100% fact.
And he would beat the unmerciful fuck out of a whole lot of them. And like that he, either when he wasn't working, he'd be home, he'd be drinking. And like, it wasn't that he was violent every day when he was drinking, but he was so unpredictable with his behaviour. Yeah. You never knew what was going to set him off and when he was going to snap.
Yeah, I get you.
And because he was a travelling salesman, so embarrassing, but anyway, the family would have to move with him.
Oh yes, of course.
He was going around. Do you know?
We must follow the circus.
Mm-hmm. And the family ended up moving to Dallas, Texas. And so Richard would have been in his early teens at this point. But they never really settled anywhere in Texas permanently, and they constantly were bouncing between different poor neighbourhoods in the area. So I think they ended up having something like scandalous, like 22 like different addresses within the space of like a 10-month period.
Jesus Christ.
Like, they were constantly going. So like, if you think of it, the kids, especially Richard, didn't really have any stability considering mm-hmm. how messed up this kid already was. I'm not saying his other like brothers and sisters weren't traumatized at the death of their dad, but because Richard was like so close to him, I feel like it did yeah. hit him harder. So like yeah. that, they were being bounced around from pillar to post, and they didn't know when the other lunatic was going to go on a drunken rampage, and so they were always on edge. And it was very much like a lost by situation where all the kind of the damaged kids kind of flocked together. And because no one cared enough to pay them any attention, they pretty much got away whatever, like, wherever they wanted to. Without, like, little yeah. or no repercussion. So they did.
Yeah.
But if you think of it, like, as well, if they were all emotionally damaged kids, like, they didn't know how to channel the emotion or the anger. So what other way are they going to do it besides getting angry yeah. and wrecking the place? At age 13, Richard was already an alcoholic, and he was eating fistfuls of speed. Like, not one or two tabs, like, oh. the norm. Fistfuls.
Hey, that's a great idea.
Mm-hmm, that'll do, Richard.
Fantastic. That'll sort you.
And it was also at this time that he became acquainted with the law. Because he learned how to break into homes by opening windows with a switchblade. So we're off to a great start.
Yeah.
Already.
Fistfuls of speed, alcoholism and thievery.
Woo!
It's the trifecta of any good husband.
Oh, a keeper 100%. Is what he was. But every time he got arrested or in trouble, his mum Mary would just get him out of it and send him on his way. So even if you think about Mary's behaviour, she did a complete 180. Because when the kids were younger, like I said, they couldn't swear, they couldn't misbehave without her like bearing down the hand of God on them. But now one of them's a fucking swindling pisshead and she's turning a blind eye. She doesn't care now. I feel like Mary's probably been like battered a bit too much. She's like, I just give the fuck up. She didn't care about their behaviour after that. Did not care.
Can you blame the poor woman? I mean, I was asking, how did she get them out of everything?
To turn it on. Well, see, I'm like, is she turning on the charm or was she turning, you know? Not that I'm saying Mary was like...
on her knees.
Yeah, she very well could have been. Like, I doubt she was, like, praying on her knees just the whole thought. Time. But, look, just an observation.
No.
Still no judgments, Mary. Look, sure. You do you,
at
girl.
Least she had plenty of practice.
Do you know, like, no judgments, girl. Richard would also sustain a serious head injury when he fell from the top of a tree at White Rock Lake in Dallas, Texas. So with Richard now possessing the trauma trifecta, physical, mental and emotional abuse and a healthy brain injury, one might say it was just a recipe for disaster. And terrible things were going to come.
This is the most, like, there's 20 movies about this guy's life and how that turns into a serial killer.
Yeah.
There's 500 books about it.
Like, doesn't it literally feel like it's copy and paste with so many of these bad bastards, like...
Yeah.
Shitty dad.
Head injury? Check.
Stray moms? Yes.
Yep. Bad childhood? Abuse. Check.
Yes. Physical abuse?
Woo-hoo. Substance abuse? Check.
And not even like a normal healthy amount of substance abuse?
No. Like, not the productive kind. Christ. So,
by age 15, it's 1958, right? And Richard has officially dropped out of school. He had terrible... Like, he's more blind than I am, and that's saying something. But he refused to wear his glasses when he was reading the board because he was afraid that people were going to stare at him. And because his last name is Speck, I'm assuming he was like, oh, they're going to make fun of me for being Specky because that's what
Specky
I would
Specky boy!
Would feel like. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, 100%.
You can see it. But Specky we also beast. Know, like all the bold kids, they're thrown at the back of the class because my teacher doesn't want them in their fucking line of sight.
Yep.
So this poor hooer hadn't a hope of writing anything down.
No.
No, not
0% chance.
And with that, his grades got that bad that he didn't even have a chance of graduating. So he just gave up. Like, there wasn't a hope.
Jesus Christ.
He was going to get his high school diploma, so he was like, nah, fuck this, I'm out. And Richard then worked for a 7-Up bottling company in 1960, and he worked there from 1963. In 1961, Richard met 15-year-old Shirley Ann Malone. So he was like 18 at the time, 19 at the time and around.
Right.
I think. So like, it's a bit noncey. Do you know what I mean? But like, not as noncerific as previous people that we've,
like a bit sus, but given the time period and all that, it's like, eh, okay.
Yeah. You can turn an eye.
Yeah.
And they met at the Texas State Fair.
Of course they did.
They wasted no time in bumping uglies, and within 3 weeks of meeting, Shirley fell pregnant.
Oh,
and within 3 months, they were married. Can someone say shotgun wedding? They're like, nope.
Be the quickest fucking wedlock. Do you take this bitch?
Yep.
Yeah, I do. Yep.
Because somehow having a child out of wedlock was more sinful than taking fucking fistfuls of speed.
Honestly.
On a regular basis. Can't be doing that.
God will never forgive you. Because God can forgive theft, but not having a child out of wedlock.
No. Not at all.
The shame. The horror.
So, like I said, he stayed there until 1963. Because in July of that year, Richard got caught forging a co-worker's paycheck, so he got this fucking sack, obviously, and rightfully so. And that same
month he
robbed a supermarket of exactly $3, a packet of fags and a few cans. So his aims were high.
Worth it. The 3 quid was for some ramen in another supermarket.
Exactly.
What else are you buying? Although then again, I suppose 3 quid would have been a bit more back then, wouldn't it?
Ah, yeah, but man, if...
Probably would have got like a stack of rice and some sauce.
Like, if you're going that big...
Yeah, honestly.
Go home. Like, take a lot more. If you're going to get caught robbing, like...
What did he do? Fucking rob them at 8 o'clock in the morning when they just opened and there was nothing in the till.
As you learn, this man is, like, extremely dismal. Because he got caught straight away.
Mm.
And he was sentenced to 3 years imprisonment in Texas State Penitentiary. But because he was ever so good while he was in prison this time, he only served 16. Ugh. And like I've said this there not so long ago, like other pieces of shit that we've covered on this podcast, it didn't take Richard long to graduate from petty crimes and move on to much more serious offences.
To the big ones.
Mm-hmm.
Boo-hoo. Of course.
So he's roughly 23, 24 at this point, okay? And exactly 1 week after his parole, on January 9th, 1965... at approximately 2:20 a.m., Richard attacked a woman with a 17-inch carving knife in a car park of an apartment complex.
Oh my God.
For no fucking reason. Like, he wasn't trying to rob her. No. He just lost his shit and just tried to stab this woman to death. But he got spooked because she wasn't laying down easy. Like, this woman was fighting with everything she had. And he wasn't expecting that. So it kind of scared him off when she started screaming and she was hammering him back like nearly as good as she got it.
Good woman.
And a neighbour, thankfully, had heard the commotion and rang the police that surprisingly arrived within a few minutes. And Richard was caught almost immediately. And he was convicted of aggravated assault. Richard. And he was given 16 months for this aggravated assault. But because he obviously just violated his parole, he was meant to serve 4 to 5 years anyway for that alone. So like,
right,
this concurrent bullshit, I don't feel like it just shouldn't happen. Like, tack it on, give it an extra, not to run side by side. But
yeah,
someone in administration made a massive cock up and Richard only ended up serving 6 months. And he was released early on July the 2nd, 1965. I don't know what the cock-up was. I couldn't find it anywhere. But someone had made a huge mistake. And they couldn't rectify it. So, like, he was out. I don't know how it happened. I don't even know what the mistake was. But he got out within 6 months.
What the fuck?
I don't know.
How do you fuck up that badly?
I don't know. And I feel like it was so tightly wrapped. Because someone was so ashamed that has happened. That's why we don't know. yeah. what the cock-up was. And after Jesus getting Christ. Released unnaturally early, you would think Richard would take this as a sign, you know, to get his shit together, calm his tits. But no.
Start behaving himself.
You would assume. He kind of took it as a sign, like, let's see what the fuck I can get away with now.
The invincible Dick Bacon.
And Shirley now, God bless her, was finally sick of it because he was always violent with her anyway, behind closed doors. Like, nobody knew that he was beating the shit out of her, but he'd also sexually abuse her as well. And now because he was after attacking this woman out of nowhere with a massive carving knife, what's to stop him going to murder her then, considering he was already doing these horrendous things to her?
Yeah.
So like that, she was like, get the fuck away from me, and filed for a divorce. In December 1965, Richard then moved in with a 29-year-old divorced woman to babysit her kids as a means of income. Because he'd nowhere to go now. Shirley had fucked him out. Rent was expensive, so he needed a roommate. Like, yeah. There was no way he's going to be able to live on his own. And apparently, Richard had met this woman while she was bartending at Ginny's Lounge, which happened to be Richard's local haunt. Like, it was the pub that he'd the pub where he practically lived. This was this place. Right. This is where he met this woman, right? And the pair of them struck up a friendship pretty quickly because Richard found her extremely interesting and, like, unlike any woman he'd ever met before. She was an ex-professional wrestler that took no shit and just had great chat. So she was a shining star to Richard. So she was.
Yeah.
And apparently Richard's mother, Mary, vouched for him as well, telling the bartender that he's the right person to trust and he's great with kids. He's a legit violent rapist, Mary. I don't know where.
Not sure if that is exactly the right assessment there.
No, like, why would he mind someone else's kids when he's not even seeing his own?
Yeah.
You know? Charlie has quite literally banned him from seeing the kids, so what makes
him 10 out of 10 will beat your child.
Mm-hmm. In January in 1966, Richard gets into an altercation with another bar goer in Ginny's Lounge, right? And instead of solving it like normal people, you know, by just having a simple little scrap, Richard pulls out a knife and viciously stabs.
I knew the stabby was coming.
You fucking knew it.
You could feel it.
You could feel the stab. And Richard was charged with aggravated assault, but his mum hired him a pricey defence attorney that was very, very good at his job.
Mary, you're not being a good parent.
No, she's not. She's being a stupid bitch. Sorry now.
Honestly.
In the end, Richard was only fined $10 and his charge was reduced to disturbing the peace instead of attempted murder. And he was only to serve 3 days in jail. And you know what? The sly whore didn't even end up paying the $10 fine. He just did the jail time and then disappeared, and the police didn't bother to go find him, like, to chase up after, like, this $10. 3 days in jail for attempted murder.
That is...
If I thought I could get away with that.
That is unbelievable. Oh, honestly.
Like, not that
Do you know how many people I would actually murder? Do a week in prison. Sorted.
Like, thanks, pal. On March 5th, 1966, Richard bought a beat-up car, and the following day, on March 6th, he robbed a convenience store and stole 70 sleeves of cigarettes. Do you want to know what Richard did with these 70 sleeves of cigarettes? Right? He sold them out of the trunk of the car that he had just bought in the same car park where the convenience store was that he had just robbed. The idiocy, the gall, the gumption of this man.
Why?
I really don't know, because after he had cleared the stock, Richard had dumped the car because he thought that was the only possible way the crime could be connected to him, and not the fact that he was quite literally shown his face at the scene of the crime and flogging the exact stolen goods that he had just taken from the shop. See, when he's a dumb bastard, like, he's actually so stupid.
This is just
like, Richard, what are you at?
In what multiverse was that a good idea?
It was not. Like, and surprisingly, would you believe, you're never going to guess, the police figured out it was Richard. Pretty much.
Oh.
Straight away. And a warrant was issued for his arrest on March 8th. Very good police work. The boys are doing well. And while, right, this is still all taking place in Dallas, right, at the moment. And while he was in Dallas, so from a teenager to mid-20s. He had committed a total of 42 crimes that he was charged for, but that's not including the ones that he didn't get caught for. So Richard was a busy man.
Jesus Christ.
But yet again, a shite thief. Who was doing that? 42 times.
You got caught.
Like, you think you'd learn after, I don't know, attempt 10? Like, shit, lads, I need to change up my game.
Unless he's just robbing so fucking much that it's like 10% of the time he gets caught. Then I'd be like, all right.
Yeah, that's true too. Because he would break into places like quite regularly. Yeah, so you could be right. But Richard knew that this time, if he got caught, he's fucked. He's spending a long time in prison because 42 offences, his own is 43rd. He's not getting out of it. Like, no matter how pricey the lawyer was, or defence attorney,
no,
his man was able to get him. So March 9th, Richard's sister, Carolyn, drove him to a Dallas bus station where he boarded a bus bound for Chicago, Illinois. And Richard stayed with his sister, Martha, who I'm just going to mention now. I find it kind of a little bit interesting. Was a former pediatrician nurse. So just bear that in mind. Okay?
Okay. Yeah, right.
Save that for later. I just find it interesting. But even in adulthood, the two of them, they didn't hate each other, but they didn't get on the best. And Martha would kind of keep an eye on Richard and make sure, like, oh, you're going out and you're applying for jobs. She's being, like, very much a motherly figure, and Richard found it extremely suffocating, so he's like, I don't fucking think so. Not about this, Martha.
Right, okay.
Thanks a bunch. So he...
Don't tell me how to live my life, Martha.
Don't look out for me, you stupid bitch. So he ended up leaving Martha's house and ended up moving in with his brother Howard. And they ended up moving to one of the towns that they ended up living in while they were in Chicago when they were younger, called Monmouth, right? And like Martha, Howard tried to get Richard on the straight and narrow. He was getting him jobs. He was making sure he was fed, that he had a roof over his mouth. A roof over his mouth? What the fuck did I just say? Am I having a stroke? I think I am.
Look, that bridge has sailed. It's fine.
Oh, fuck me, Christ. A roof over his head, would you believe? And he ended up getting him a job as a plasterer, because Howard was a carpenter, so any house that he was working in, Richard would come along with him and, like, do the plastering, right? It seemed like it was going grand. But one day, Richard got wind that Shirley had actually remarried two or three days after their divorce had finalised. And that was on March 16th. So he was like, do you know what?
Oh my God.
I don't fucking think so. And he was livid. My God, this man went on a rampage. Like, he was so, so angry. He stopped going to work. And practically spent every working moment or waking moment in taverns around the town. Like, it's kind of the behaviour that he was in before he seemed to get his life turned around. Because Shirley, God bless her, even though he did all these horrible things for her, how dare she go?
The big audacity of
remarry somebody else that was going to treat her like a piece of shit. And he started to get, in trouble with the law again, because what did he do? Pulled a knife.
Oh, for
on a man in a bar. But because nobody was hurt, like, he'd pulled the knife on him, but he didn't actually do the stabby stab, you know?
Yeah.
He was let go because of that. The police were just like, oh, for fuck's sake, Richard, put it away. And that was it. Though they were kind of called to the scene of the crime.
He's not whipping his dick out in public. Like, he is trying to stab people.
Yeah.
Like,
don't turn a blind eye.
Oh, my God.
And if only Richard had been arrested that day, it's possible, well, we can speculate, it might be possible that the following events may not have happened. On April 3rd, 1966, 65-year-old Virgil Harris had returned home at 1 o'clock in the morning after spending her night babysitting. However, when she entered her home, she found Richard in the middle of it, ransacking the place. So he was robbing her, like.
Oh my God.
And Richard hadn't expected anyone to be home, because he was kind of staking the place out for a couple of hours, and I think when he saw Virgil leave, he wasn't thinking she was going to be coming back, because, like, that was so late in the morning. The woman's 65, she's a bit old, we all know old people like to go to bed early.
Of course.
I don't think he was expecting her to be out, like, working.
Yeah.
So she was going to be gone, for the night. But it still didn't deter his plans. He drew a knife and demanded Virgil to comply with his demands or he'd kill her. Obviously.
Of course.
She's going to do as she's told. This fucking strange man with a southern drawl is there barking at her in her fucking sitting room. You're going to Do you know what I mean?
100%.
And this is where he escalates again to being a bigger piece of shit. So he blindfolded her, tied her up, and he viciously raped her before he continued to ransack the house and stole jewellery and any other like small things he could grab his hands on that he'd eventually be able to sell. And would you believe it gets worse again? Because a week later, on April 9th, at 2:45 a.m, 32-year-old barmaid Mary Kay Pierce had failed to return home after her shift at Frank's Place. It was her brother-in-law's tavern.
Right.
And she was expected to be back in work the following morning, but she never showed. And it was very, very unlike her not to come into work. Especially if it's a family establishment. If she's not feeling well or if something came up, she's going to ring the sister.
Give him a shout,
oh well, tell Frank. Not going to his fucking place. I can't do it, like. So they knew something was immediately wrong. Because she's not just going to disappear. Like, she had kids at home. There was no fucking way she was going to up and run, like, and disappear and act on them.
Mm-hmm.
So they contacted the police, but they couldn't officially report her missing on the 9th. They had to do that bullshit where they had to wait a couple of days.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't until April 13th that they could officially report her as missing. But it was on that same day her body was found in an abandoned hog house behind Frank's Place.
Jesus.
Mm-hmm. Mary had died from a blow to her abdomen. So she'd either been repeatedly kicked or struck with something extremely heavy. Because the blow had ruptured her liver. So she died of internal bleeding.
Fuck.
That's how bad it was. But it's still unclear what the weapon was or what action was done that led to her death. And they don't know if she was sexually assaulted or not. They couldn't tell. But would you like to hazard a guess who frequented Frank's Place on a regular basis?
Was it, perhaps by any chance, Dick Bacon?
How did you know?
I just had a very lucky guess, I think.
So smart. And guess, right, guess again, who was briefly working on that very hog house where Mary's body was found? Just like a month previously. Can you guess? Any guesses at all?
Jeez, I'm going to have to go for Dick Bacon once again.
How are you so good at this?
It's just a talent. It's just my psychic abilities.
You're like literally so smart. I don't know how you figured this out.
The smartest.
But well done. So the police discovered that Richard would have odd jobs here and there. And one which included renovating the hog house a month before Mary was murdered. So Richard was due to collect his final wage packet for the renovation project, right? And he was due to do that on April 15th.
Right.
And the police met him and they told him, look, don't make yourself scarce. Because everybody related to the hog house, so any of the workers and anybody from Frank's Place needed to be questioned just in relation to Mary's murder. Yeah. They weren't even saying to him, look, we're a bit sus of you, Richard. It was more of just like an informal mentioning, like, look, we'll probably have to ask you a couple of questions at some point.
A couple of questions, yeah.
Very bold of them to assume that Richard would listen to them. So he was like, oh yeah, that's like, no bothers. Sure, look, when you need me, I'll be staying at Christie's Hotel, just give me a shout. Cops? Oh yeah, dead sound, lad. Chat you after. Because, obviously, the police should put their full trust in a proven silent or violent psychopath with a knife kink.
It's
the correct
only
thing they should have done in this situation.
The only thing they could have done in this situation, I would say.
I do not blame them at all for what was to come.
See, nothing wrong with it myself.
Nope. And on April 19th, the police showed up to the Christie's Hotel, questioned Richard. Can you guess what happened
next? Who wasn't there?
Ding, ding, fucking ding. Your intelligence is actually blowing me away at the moment. I do not know how you're so good at guessing. What's going to happen? Like, it's actually, it's a marvel.
Surprising myself, to be honest. Really am.
So, that's it. Like you said, he wasn't there. And the police were completely devilled that Richard broke his promise to them. Oh, fuck. Richard's done a runner.
Dreams.
So with his sudden departure, the cops were now a little bit sus. So they began a search of his room to see if they could find anything that might lead to his new location. Not even necessarily that he had
any evidence relating to the murder.
Mm-hmm. They just wanted to kind of find out like where he might have gone.
Yeah.
But the initial search of the room led to the finding of jewellery and a radio belonging to Virgil Harris that went missing the night that she was attacked. and as well as other items of jewellery that were reported stolen from two separate burglaries in the past month. So man had been busy. And even though him and Martha didn't have a fucking, you know, great relation because he found her unbearable, he now went back with his tail between his legs. And do you know what he said to Richard, or to fucking Martha and her husband Jean, right? He told them he had to flee Monmouth because he refused to sell drugs for a dangerous, powerful foreign crime syndicate and his life was in danger. Like, I doubt you're on the Colombians' radar, hun. Calm down.
Is that... I'm not selling drugs for you. You must die. Exactly how it goes down every single time.
Like, there isn't going to be other, like, some other poor sad sack in this tiny fucking town that's
first
willing
of all,
to do
they
it for
start
them.
With children, so yeah. Get over yourself.
As if they're going to give drugs to someone that's already an addict and a thief.
Yeah.
Like, that's honestly that simple, like, business logic.
That's not exactly, it is not good hiring.
No,
not good staff management.
No, not at all. And his sister, Christ. Martha, and her husband Jean weirdly believed it. But they were determined to keep him safe and get him back on his feet. Jean was an ex-Navy man, and he thought that the US Merchant Marine would be a great fit for Richard, and he hoped it would kind of crown him the same way it did him.
Oh my god.
Right?
And then they went to war.
Oh no, if only. Because then there was a hope this man would have died, but look.
No, they never do, but it's always... don't they all fuck off to some fucking... branch of strict structured fucking army or marines or whatever, like, or the cops. Like, come on, man,
it's get not going
thing.
To
get your own thing.
Yeah,
can you all stop copying each other?
Exactly.
Like, this will make the best backstory ever.
So on April 25th, 1966, Jean took Richard to the U.S. Coast Guard office to apply for a letter of authority to work as an apprentice seaman. So you had to get a letter before you could even get an application. So Jean had to, like, recommend him to even start an application mm-hmm. process, right? And for the application process, before he even started looking for a job, he had to be fingerprinted, photographed, and have a physical. And thank Christ, they were so fucking anal retentive about making sure everybody that applied would be in check.
Yeah.
And we'll understand
thank
why later.
Christ.
Mm-hmm. On April 30th, he managed to get a job as a crew member on the Inland Steel Clarence B. Randall ship. But Richard only lasted 4 days on board because on May 3rd, he was airlifted from the ship to a hospital in Michigan with acute appendicitis.
Right? Oh my gosh.
And he needed, like, an emergency appendectomy. Appendectomy? What
appendectomy.
The fuck is that? I know what the operation is. I don't know what way I wrote that down. My god.
Appendectomy.
That thing, anyway. Should have let it explode. But we could all 100%. Pray. One, why couldn't the gurney that they were carrying him, why couldn't it have snapped midair while he was over the sea and let the hooter drown? Infection, sepsis. Would have been nice for you to show your face. Fucking rude that you didn't, because unfortunately, he made a full recovery.
Of course he did.
But while he was in hospital, recovering from said appendicitis, he befriended a 28-year-old divorce nurse, Judy. Oh shit, Judy, what is your last name, pet? What way did I write this?
Judy Trudy Booty.
I'm going to say Judy Lokanimi. And just remember her for later, right?
I will try.
Just remember Judy, the last name I butchered it, you're probably not going to remember it. Much apologies to poor Judy. So, like I said, he made a full recovery and he ended up rejoining the fleet. And that was on May 20th, right? And he remained there until June 14th, until he got the sack. Because Richard then, he was getting pissed, he was whipping his dick out, showing it to everybody. The boys were like, Richard, put that away. It's turning my stomach.
What the fuck?
I don't want to say that. But... he had started a scrap with, like, a ship official one day when he was hammered, so they were like, do you know what now? You have browned us off one too many times, Richard, get the fuck off. But they didn't, like, bring him back up to where he departed. They fucked him off in Michigan, so he'd nobody.
Oh.
Which they rightfully should have. But Richard then linked back up with Judy, the nurse.
Right.
But weirdly, after the events that I'm going to cover later on happened, Judy was interviewed about her time with Richard, but she said he was literally the perfect gentleman. He was beyond kind to her. He would cook for her. He would give her gifts. Everything. He stayed with her for 2 weeks and literally treated this woman like a queen. And it's so unlike what he did in the past and what he's going to do in the future. Like, yeah. It boggles the mind. But there's a reason maybe for it, and I'll get into that later on, but it's very interesting and I'll come back to this point. And because she got on so well with him, she knew, look, he had to go back to fucking Chicago, right? She knew he had to go.
Yeah.
So she was like, look, I know you haven't got a bell on your bike. So she gave him $80. So $80 on a nurse's wage.
Jesus.
With two small kids who's divorced, like no extra income is coming in. Like, that's a lot.
No.
And like that, because they became such good friends, like she really, really trusted this man. She wasn't even looking for it back. She just gave it to him. So he gets back up to Chicago, right? And meets back up with Jean and Martha. And Jean actually seems like such a lovely man. The husband, like, he is really going out of his way to try and help and fix Richard as much as he can.
Bless him.
So when Jean realised that Richard had got the sack, he immediately started him looking, or helping him look for another job. And on June 30th, Jean drove Richard to the National Maritime Union Hiring Hall. And this was at 2335 East 100th Street in Jeffrey Manor neighbourhood of South Deering, Chicago. And this was to file paperwork for a seaman's card. And I really wish that had a different name. Like, anytime I'm saying it, it makes me think of like a loyalty rewards card. So if you're after dropping a load off at your local fucking sperm bank, collect 10 and you get fucking access to one of your kids. That's what I'm picturing. It's like, it makes me all sorts of uncomfortable. Well, spunky loyalty points aside, the hiring hall was only one block away from a two-story brick townhouse that was used as an accommodation for senior student nurses and exchange registered nurses. Sorry. Nine of whom lived at 2319 East 100th Street, just 150 metres away from the NMU hiring hall. So very, very, very close.
Yeah.
This time, Richard had no luck finding any work. And started staying with Martha again. Not that they were scrapping the whole time, but they knew Richard wasn't about to get his life around no matter how hard they tried. So obviously, like, there was a bit of tension. So instead of letting them fight, Jean was like, Richard, I'm going to help you again. Let's see if I can find you another job, so hopefully you can move the fuck out of my house.
Jesus Christ.
And so, yet again, Jean drove Richard to the NMU hiring hall on July 11th. And this time, he managed to get a job on the SS Sinclair Great Lakes. The oil ship wouldn't be departing for another day, so Richard stayed up at, it was like a boarding house. And it was called Pauline's Rooming House. And it was, even though technically you would think that the military would have paid for it, considering it would have been like people that were, they were going to be deploying, had to stay there, you know, do you think they'd cover it? But no, they didn't. You had to pay for it yourself. And it was a little bit expensive, but you know, Jean hopped the bill. He was like, here. Yeah, again, Jean is a saint. I'm definitely sick of this man shit.
100%. Jean was a saint, but also really wanted that motherfucker out of his house.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
However, on July 12th, Richard arrived at the docks to be told his position had been taken by a more experienced crewman.
Oh, shit. And
nobody was expecting Richard just to turn back around 5 minutes later, so nobody was waiting there to make sure he got on the ship. So, God bless, his accommodation was over a half hour's walk away, so it would, or drive away, so it would have been like a couple of hours walk. Easy.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So he had no choice but to sleep rough for the night. He was fucking fuming. Oh. He had rang Martha and Jean to go pick him up. They're like, oh, sorry, pal, like, we can't get there till the next morning. Like, you may figure it out. He was fucking fuming. But like that, he'd sleep on, I think it was like, wasn't an abandoned house. Like, they were kind of in the middle of like renovating it, but there was no proper rooms. I don't even think there was a roof. Just four walls. Right. And he slept in there. Shit heap. So they had finally picked him up then the next morning. It was about 9 o'clock. And they were back outside the hiring hall, but they had parked just across from 2319E 100th Street. So directly right across from the nurse's accommodation.
Mm-hmm.
And Richard had spent the guts of an hour raging about his failed job prospects. Like, it was somehow wasn't even his fault. It had to be Martha. It had to be Jean's. They weren't trying enough for him. They weren't being there for him. Not like Jean was taking time out of work to go drive him to various, like, job interviews and everything like that. Like, mm-hmm. they weren't putting him up and they weren't feeding him and all that. It was all their fault.
This fucking cocksucker.
So Martha was like, do you know what, Richard? Get the fuck out. So she gave him $25, still more than I would have given. She shouldn't have given him a fucking thing.
Nope.
And he sent him on his way. And it was about 10:30 a.m. and he was like, I had a fucking enough waiting around this hiring hall. I don't care about working. I'm going on the lash. So he spent the rest of the day getting hammered and eating speed. He wasn't eating it. The man was eating it by fistfuls. Like.
With a knife and fork. Just nom nom nom.
And he'd spent the day following. He wasn't necessarily with this woman. Following 53-year-old woman called Ella Mae Hooper around different taverns for the whole day. Like, she wasn't...
Right, stalker.
Yeah. And then at the last place he'd end up would be the Shipyard Inn. And because it was her last place she wanted to go, he'd been following her, so she kind of, like, put up with it. You know, like, she let him sit beside her, like, have a couple of drinks, talk shite and all that.
Yeah.
But once the place had kind of dulled a little bit, so there wasn't many witnesses around, Richard pulled a knife on Ella and he said, you're coming with me. Because he had actually a room booked at the Shipyard Inn.
Right.
And once he had her inside the room, viciously raped her and stole her black 22 caliber revolver. Because even though, like, he had completely overpowered her. Because, like, that she would go around to these bars a lot and I think she would kind of get into a bit of bother because men wouldn't leave her the fuck alone. So she didn't have a gun. But unfortunately, she didn't get the opportunity to use it.
To actually use it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And after he'd, you know, done attacking her, he left her in the room and went down to get dinner as if nothing had happened. Like, he did not give a shit at all.
What the fuck?
And so, yet again, he started drinking and eating fistfuls of fucking speed. Again. And he would continue doing that until at least 10:20 at night. So he goes back up to his room. It's about 1:30. He then leaves the Shipyard Inn, dressed totally in black, armed with a switchblade, a hunting knife, and Ella's revolver. And he took off in the direction of 100th Street. He ends up at 2319 East 100th Street at approximately 11 p.m. It's July 13th, 1966. He took out the switchblade and cut... Don't... The way you have, like, the windows, but if you don't want to close them because of the heat and everything, you have, like, the little protector screens. So, like, bugs and stuff can't get in.
Yes, 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 yes.
So the window was open, but the...
Fly screen was closed. Down. Yeah.
So he took the switchblade, cut a hole in it, and climbed through. After he had done that, he walked up the stairs and knocks on one of the bedroom doors. A woman called Cora Amoro answered the door to find Richard standing there holding a gun at her head. He forced his way into the room where they were, and he orders them all to go. There was, like, to say the bedrooms would have been, like, kind of lying in the halls, but there was a bigger common area because there were so many of them at the back of the house.
Yeah.
So when he met those three women go there, he then went door by door, getting them all out and pushing them into this one space. So there's six of them gathered now in this one area, right? He sits them in, like, a semicircle on the floor, turns off the lights, and lights up a cigarette. And he tells them, look, he won't harm them. He's just gathering money so he can skip town. He then stands up, puts out a cigarette, and starts cutting up a sheet that he had taken from one of the rooms. And when he was finished cutting up the sheet, he bound all of their wrists. Richard then grabbed the first nurse closest to him, Pamela Wilkening. And instead of going quietly, she squares right up to him, spits in his fucking face, and she says, I can pick you out of a lineup. Pamela.
Powerful, yeah, but like, really bad choice.
I admire her like so much for that. Like, no matter how scared she was like, fuck you. But it, yeah.
But you've just killed yourself.
Yeah. So Richard, like, I'm fucking furious. There was no way he was letting Pamela belittle him or threaten him.
Yep.
Like that. He takes her to another room and he rapes her. But in the middle of the rape, he hears noise outside. There's two more nurses that were after arriving home. 21-year-old Suzanne Farris and 21-year-old Mary Ann Jordan. they were on their way in. Richard stabbed Pamela in the heart once, threw her down on the bed, and left go take, like, get rid of the two that were just after interrupting what he was doing. Richard surprised Suzanne in the hallway and stabbed her to death as she made her way upstairs to her bedroom. Like, all the lights were off. She didn't see him coming at all. But Marianne was following, like, a little short behind her. You know, she was, like, a good couple of steps back. Didn't hear or didn't see what had happened to Susan. So she didn't see what was coming. And when she entered the house, she was almost immediately caught by Richard, who stabbed her to death. And it's not like a simple stabbed once. Like, he repeatedly savaged these women. Like, he stabbed them multiple times.
Jesus Christ.
So the nurses, Cora Amoro, I'm going to butcher these names and I'm so sorry, Merlita Corgolio and Valentina Passion were still in this one section of the room, right? And they were with Patricia Matizek and Nina Jo Schmall. They haven't a clue what's going on because they can't see anything, but they can hear banging, they can hear crashing, and they can hear crying. So they can only assume the others had come home. Richard then retreated to the main area room, taking each woman out of a time to kill them. It wasn't even like, right, okay, it wasn't going to just be these three. It's like, you're all fucking getting it now. However, one more nurse would arrive home late. 22-year-old Gloria Davey had been dropped off by her boyfriend, and Richard seen her, like, the boyfriend dropping her off at the door, so he waited and waited for her to come in and surprised her like the others. But he attacked Gloria so much more viciously than he had the rest of them. So he raped her, sodomized her, and he strangled her to death. Like, he completely brutalized this woman. And it's in relation, there's like a theory, and I'll get to it again later, maybe why Gloria was attacked as she was. So amidst all the interruptions, and because he was off his face on speed, Richard forgot just how many nurses he had tied up. And Cora managed to loosen her restraints, and she rolled underneath a bed that was in the room. They had kind of like, do you know, like the little, like, travel beds that, like, I suppose if people were staying over, they just kept there.
Mm-hmm.
And she got right in tight to the wall so he couldn't see her when she walked, or when he walked back into the room. So when he came back, he didn't realise that she had gone, and none of the other girls, inclination that one of them had escaped and was hiding. Like, they didn't even so much as look at the bed. So they didn't. Nowadays, sometimes if you were scared and you know someone's hiding somewhere, you're kind of like, you're going to throw your eye over it just to, like, I don't know, fucking nervousness. No, not these girls. Stared straight at this fucking man and refused to give him any signs that anything was, like, was up. And they weren't even necessarily hoping that Cora was going to get out and save them. Like, they all fucking knew what was coming. But if she could hide, she could live. Yeah.
If they could save one of them at least.
So Cora had to lie there as she listened to Richard drag the rest of our housemates and friends out by the room one by one and murder them. I guess she couldn't see anything, but she could hear their screams. This time around, they were a lot louder. All she could do was wait.
Fucking hell.
All she could do was wait. Terrified to fucking move. And in the late hours of the night, Richard finally finished his brutal assault. He leaves out the front door and throws the knife that he had used to fucking butcher them all into a nearby river. Returns to his room at the Shipyard Inn and goes to bed. He just come home from a hard day's work. Completely forgetting about the nurse that had originally opened the fucking door for him. Like, you think out of all the people he would have remembered, the faces he would have remembered would have been the one that not let him in, because he let himself in, but the first one he saw.
Yeah, but like, opened the door to him. Yeah.
Didn't fucking remember. So like I said, Cora had hid under that bed and she stayed there till 6 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
But Richard was hours gone at this point, but she was terrified. You know, she was staying in her space. She wasn't moving.
Yeah.
But then she was like, no, fuck it. I'm going to get out. Despite if he's there or not, she's going to try and go get help. But even though she knew there was no help in her friends. So she crawls out from underneath the bed and starts hanging out of the bedroom window. And she is screaming. She's like, they're all dead. My friends are all dead. Oh God, I'm the only one alive. And thankfully, there was a neighbour. She was up early, she was out doing her washing, and at first Cora was screaming that high pitched that the neighbour actually thought it was like a baby crying, so like she was kind of like unaudible.
Jesus.
You couldn't really understand what she was saying. But when she did figure out what had happened, the neighbour went and got their house mother. So because they were student nurses, they had to have like a more experienced nurse, you know, like keeping an eye on them,
yeah,
you know, making sure they were in check, not getting into any shenanigans. Mm-hmm. So when she went down and got her, the house mother then fucking freaked out, obviously, came running in, went up into the apartment.
Yeah.
And she was the first person to see
the carnage. Yeah.
And then she found Cora, who was understandably a fucking mess, because at this point, like, Cora was frightened in place. She didn't even go, like, walk down to see if any of the girls were okay, because she knew that they weren't. And there's no taking that sight back once you see it.
No, definitely not.
She immediately called the police, the house mother did, and they were there in a fucking flash. Bear in mind, right, at this time, the officers from the nearby police station were only a year and a half fresh from graduation.
Oh, God.
They had never seen anything like this before. And back in the day, like, do you remember, did you ever see a film Nightcrawler where, like, there was a reporter and he was listening to, like, police radio? And he would go to the scene of the crime, right? There was basically one of them. Mm. And he had heard a police dispatcher calling out for extra assistance and basically saying what the fuck was after going on in this house. So this reporter pulls up, no fucking shame, right? Just didn't.
Of course not.
But when he gets there, he sees a policeman outside and he's totally dishevelled. He looks like he has just seen a fucking war zone. Like, his shirt is all undone, his hat is on backwards, he's pissing sweat. And the reporter just asks him, you know, like, what's going on? The policeman couldn't even tell him what had happened. He just said, they're all dead. Go look. That's the only thing he could say. He was fucking traumatised. He was one of the first on the scene.
Jesus Christ.
And when the reporter went in, he said there was so much blood in the halls that when you stepped on the carpet, the blood actually rose up and covered the sole of your shoe. This place was drenched. That's how bad
that
the attack
was. That
is
insane.
Oh yeah, it's like that's what I mean by it wasn't just like a simple like stabby stab. It was, he fucking massacred these women. And every cop
fucking hell
that entered that apartment complex or house, whatever the fuck you want to call it, the dorm, when they came out, they all vomited. Every single one of them vomited.
Jesus Christ.
But this was as well, like, the cops, they hadn't, even experienced cops hadn't seen that at this time, because this is like pre-Manson era, so it's pre like mass murder era, like there hadn't really been many, so none of them were really experienced in this, so this was a complete and utter shock to all of them. So it was,
God, I can imagine.
I don't know how you'd ever get over seeing that.
Yeah,
you just wouldn't.
I don't either. No.
And like I'd mentioned before, Richard, you know, was off his tits on speed. And we know he already made a fatal error with Cora, but he also made another. He didn't wear any fucking gloves when he went in.
Oh.
And because, like I said, the police had never had any experience with stuff like this. Not the local police, not the city police, so the FBI were called in. And within 3 days, the FBI knew it was fucking Richard Speck. It didn't take them long to investigate who was coming in and out of that fucking hiring hall that was only 150 metres away. And because they were so anal about fingerprinting and photographing everybody that came in to apply for an application, they had him. They fucking had, there was no shadow of a doubt that this man was guilty.
Amazing.
So Cora was then given the photograph from his application form, like, do you recognise him? And she was like, that's fucking him. So chase is now underway. A picture of Richard was now published in the paper and put on the news with descriptions of any scars and tattoos that he had, particularly a tattoo he had on his forearm that said, born to raise hell. So fucking embarrassing.
Oh, get out of my life.
Isn't it?
That is so cringe. Oh, I hate this man.
So it's July 17th, right? Still, we're in 1966. Mm-hmm. And Richard is held up in his hotel room in the Shipyard Inn because it's going rounds on the radio. He's wanted for fucking 8 counts of murder. And it's all on the newspaper, so he can't leave the room. There's going to be a crowd of people downstairs in the dining area going to look down, see their local paper and see his fat fucking mug on it. So he knows he's fucked. Can't go anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And seeing no way out, Richard attempts self-murder.
For real, or...?
No, not for real. He drank an old bottle of wine, smashed the bottle, and slit his wrist with the shards.
Oh, drama queen.
And he didn't even do it because he felt guilty for what he did. he just couldn't hack going back to fucking prison.
Yeah.
So he just saw it as a cop out. So it's fucking pathetic. But you know, he wussed out and started crying. Oh, I need an ambulance. I'm after slitting my wrist. I need an ambulance. So he was taken to Cook County Hospital for like the emergency fucking patch up work. But on shift that night was Dr. Leroy Smith, 25 years old, who had just so happened to watch the news before he came into work for his shift.
Right.
So Dr. Leroy made his way to assist, you know, the attempted suicide case. And he sees Richard's Born to Raise Hell tattoo. And to avoid suspicion, Dr. Leroy calmly walks away and he immediately calls the police and he tells them Richard Speck is in my fucking hospital. Still acting like nothing is up, he walks back to Richard's bed to pretend to be doing his checks. When Richard asks, he goes like, oh, could I please have a cup of water? Dr. Leroy bent down face level to him and whispered, did you give any of those nurses water? I was like, ah!
Oh, there is no way. Lead.
You cannot tell me that Dr. Leroy isn't sexy. I feel like that is just, like, the way. Oh my god. I loved everything about that. It's like, you're letting him know. And because he's all tied up and bound to the fucking bed because he was a danger to himself, yep, because he was suicidal, he couldn't move.
Oh, he must have been fucking human.
Oh, he was raging. I was delighted.
I love it. I
fucking love that for Dr. Leroy. So the police arrived immediately and they basically had to guard him in the hospital for 3 weeks. One, because there was a chance somebody was going to go in and there like and absolutely murder the shit out of him.
Facts.
But two, they wanted to play this perfectly. So they didn't want to attempt to question him when he was in a vulnerable state. So they waited there for 3 weeks until he was seen to be in good health.
Right.
Because at the time, there was a lot of cases where when the Miranda rights were being, you know,
given to them,
read to fucking offenders, a lot of cases had been dropped and overturned because, like, oh, well, the perpetrator or accused perpetrator wasn't of sound mind when it was said to them, so they got off on a technicality.
Right, okay.
And they were not trying to have it happen now.
Nope.
Not at all. So they didn't even question him like that for 3 weeks. They just stayed by his side. So he then, after the 3 weeks, he was not let out, but he was put in police custody for roughly a year before his trial could take place, because like that they wanted to keep a close eye on him, one, so he didn't pull a Houdini act.
Yep.
And they wanted this man to get his justice. So Richard's trial was to take place in Poria on April 3rd, 1967, so nearly a full year later, like shy of a couple of months. And they had to do it 3 miles away from Chicago because, like that, it could be seen the crimes were committed in Chicago, he wasn't going to get a fair trial, and they wanted this done seamlessly.
Yeah, fair.
Had to be perfect, there couldn't be any bias at all. And the press weren't even allowed into the courtroom.
Wow.
Because any shenanigans, though, the press can like drum stuff up for the media and stuff like that, the police weren't having it, so they put a gag order on them. They were stopping all that bullshit. And it was, we know that was very unusual, because usually the press are allowed in there all the time, so nobody had a clue what was going on. They only knew that the person responsible had been arrested.
Right.
They knew nothing about the trial. So doctors from around the state were brought in to assess Richard's mental state, you know, kind of gauge maybe why he did what he did. Mm-hmm. And one doctor by the name of Marvin Ziprin concluded that Richard had an obsessive compulsive personality and a Madonna whore complex towards women.
Right, okay.
Right, for people that don't know what a Madonna whore complex is, it's basically the inability to maintain like sexual arousal within a committed loving relationship. It's said to develop in men who see women as saintly Madonnas, which Madonna, Mary, Mother of God, are debased whores. And men with this complex desire a sexual partner who has been degraded, so the whore, while they can't fulfill their sexual needs with a respectable partner, the Madonna. So remember I was saying before there may have been rhyme and reason why he did certain things that he did.
Yeah.
So with the likes of Judy, he could have viewed her as the Madonna. Do you know, like in a way she was his like his saviour, she looked after him, he treated her like goddess compared to everybody else, and he never tried
to do anything to her.
No.
Yeah.
Not even like he didn't even try to come on to her in any sense, right? But with the girls, like the nurses, I think he raped two or three of them. But Gloria, the one who he had seen being dropped off by her boyfriend, she got the worst out of all of them. Like, he viciously attacked this one. So, like, you could kind of see that, well, he's seen her being dropped off by her boyfriend and could have deemed her, well, she's already been degraded.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying? So that's why he attacked her as much as she did. And why with Pamela as well, because she spat in his fucking face. Like, no respectable woman to him is going to do that. So that's why he attacked her. I don't know, like, that's just where you could see where
it's fair, like,
this
definitely.
Complex made sense. Do you know? And he was also given, like, fucking brain scans just to see if anything, do you know, was amiss. It was.
Shocker.
A neurologist got given scans of his brain and he said he'd never seen the likes of before. There's basically two parts of his brain. Don't ask me, I'm not a fucking neurologist to give you the facts. But basically there was something extremely wrong with these two parts. And he said there's no way this man should have been able to function normally with what was wrong with these, from what, like, ever he had seen.
Fucking hell.
On these scans. I'm sure, you know, Eden Speed brain injury, so...
Yeah, I mean, not surprising, to be honest, at all.
Not surprising, no. So they were kind of saying, like, look, maybe he was in his right mind. Like, he did know what he was doing was wrong.
Yeah.
But they have to take into consideration all these other factors.
All that brain damage.
And as Cora was the only survivor, she had to go to trial and testify against him. But the police were, like, really, really worried about her doing it because she'd already suffered, like, through such a traumatic event. Yeah. They didn't want her to have to look at this man ever again. But nonetheless, had to happen. And Cora was called to the stand and she was asked if the person that killed her friend was in the room. Oh, do you want to know what this bad bitch did?
Tell me.
She made her way down from the stand, walked directly over to Richard, pointed her finger so close to his face that they were practically touching, and she said, "This is the man." Cora, you brave little soul.
Honestly, you bad bitch.
Like, that would have been so scary.
Wouldn't it? The man who murdered and raped all of your friends. Like.
And she eyeballed him. Like the piece of shit that he was.
Wow.
It was fucking fantastic. On April 15th, 1967, the jury only deliberated for 49 minutes and they came back with a guilty verdict. And Illinois at the time had capital punishment, so the big bitch was going to fry.
Boop, boop.
He was going to fucking sizzle.
Love that.
So on June 5th, the judge was like, yeah, you're headed for the chair. But we can never be blessed.
So I knew. I shouldn't have got hopeful so quick.
No, you shouldn't have got hopeful. Because the state of Illinois had to reverse the death penalty because they unconstitutionally dismissed potential jurors. So basically, any, like, religious types that would have advocated for the death penalty not to go ahead, they basically, when they might have had to take them on, they just kind of turned a blind eye and be like, no, not you.
No, thank you.
They wanted to get jurors that were going to put him in his rightful place, which was a box.
Yeah.
So because all of that came out, death penalty had to be taken off the fucking cards.
Fuck's sake.
Mm-hmm. Pure bollocks, we know it. And the presiding judge at the time, Herb J. Passion, he was like, this is also bollocks. But he was going to make it impossible for Richard to see light as a free man.
Good.
Ever again. So he sentenced Richard to 1,200 years in prison, so there was absolutely no fucking way this man was going to get out.
Oh my god! Mm-hmm. I love that. I love it so much.
And even though he had, like, a really lengthy sentence, by law he was still allowed to appeal. But every time he tried to appeal his sentence, because the longevity of his sentence, he was rejected within 10 minutes every fucking time. And I was delighted. But when he was in prison, like, he was doing drugs, he was making moonshine, and when he got caught, he's like, I can get in more trouble, I'm already sentenced to over 1,000 years, fuck off. And they couldn't say anything. He was given the name the Birdman because he was literally kind of raising a couple of fucking ravens from his prison cell.
What the fuck?
And when the police, or not the police, when the guards were like, Richard, no, that's not allowed. There was a spinning vent, right? A spinning fan.
Yeah, yeah.
To allow for the sweltering heat, right? Richard said, well, if I can't have them, they're not going free. And he threw the fucking birds into the spinning fan and let them get totally chopped up to fucking bits. This man was mental. And I want you to prepare yourself now, because do you remember I said about the video that traumatised me?
Uh-huh. I'm already traumatised. I'm scared.
No, this made me laugh so much. So we're going to skip to 1988, because who are still alive? A camera crew were sent into Stateville Correctional Centre in Crest Hill, Illinois, where Richard was staying, to film the prisoners, don't kind of give an insight into what prisoner life was like, right? Mm-hmm. And while the camera crew were there, they met Richard Speck, who was wearing women's underwear and had a thin, like, negligee t-shirt on, right? And to their surprise, he had little B-sized titties, like B-cup-sized titties.
Right.
Richard had been smuggling in hormones to transition while he was in prison, because he thought if he became more effeminate and let the men take advantage and rape him, he wouldn't be murdered and he wouldn't be attacked. And it weirdly worked. Nobody did, so he literally tried to make himself more womanlike. Not that he was actually like transgender and like that. He was not at all. He just did this as like a defense mechanism. But it gets. We're not done. So obviously at this fucking site, they knew who Richard was, and they've just seen him now with titties. Richard, what's going on? So they stopped to record and talk to him, and he was sitting beside another prisoner, right, and he's sitting in these like little blue knickers, this like white tank top thing. He then takes off the t-shirt and you see his swinging boobs. That itself was traumatizing, right? But then he starts going on about the murder. Uh-huh. And he was like, he didn't regret it. They had what was coming to them. He didn't feel an ounce bit guilty about it at all. And he said, oh, it's so much harder to strangle a person than you realise, and it's not how it is on TV. It takes a lot more effort. But then, out of the blue, cameras are still rolling. The prisoner that he was sitting beside, Richard drops to his knees and starts sucking this man's peen in the middle of this being recorded. And the cameramen were just like, cut the fucking cameras. It went into disarray. Like,
why?
And this is on YouTube, and you can watch it. Don't recommend it. It's fucking traumatizing. I just wasn't expecting. He was just talking about strangling someone, and he just drops to his legs. I was like, Richard,
what?
Calm down.
I don't understand anything you just said. I am so baffled. How old is he at this point?
He's like in his late 40s.
That's a sight.
Mid 40s, he's in at this point.
Late 40s prisoner with B cup titties in blue
long hair
underwear.
It's
sucking a dick out of nowhere after talking about murder.
Yeah, in full view of a camera.
All right. Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
And they were apparently filming the video because they were like, Richard's living such a good life in fucking prison. So they were kind of going there to do an expose, but weren't expecting the peen sucking.
Yeah.
At the same time. So when they took that, right, after the stopped rolling, the video was then shown to like a group of Congress to be like, can we please bring back the death penalty? He's clearly having a great time. But by all means, I don't think Richard actually was having a great time. He was completely being humiliated, violated, and he now had titties.
He probably was into it,
so no matter how great of a time he said he was having, I don't think he genuinely was having one.
I don't know. He willingly sucked that dick.
I don't know.
He probably put the first dick in his mouth and was like, do you know what? This is what Seaman Dick Bacon was meant to do his whole life. He just had a penchant for the dick sucking. He was like, what do you know, man? I have no gag reflex whatsoever. This is wonderful.
I won't argue.
It's a real turning point for him.
Because he then said, if they only knew how much of a good time I was having in here, they'd surely set me free. So even he was like, yep, this is going to be the best fucking time of my life. But he died of a mahoose of heart attack on December 5th, 1991, aged just 49.
Well,
that is the end.
Thank God his fun was ended. I hope it was a long heart attack and not like a quick and done.
No, I hope it took time.
Me too.
But yeah, that was the fucking mental story of Richard Speck.
You weren't lying about the end.
No, because it was so unexpected.
Yeah.
I was expecting him to go and be like a horrible person like while still in prison, but not. Whatever about getting peen, it's the growing the boobs.
Yeah, that one's a bit... It's a new one. We went from the most textbook murder ever to big plot twist. Big time.
Yep, very, very big. Yep, it just it traumatised me.
Yeah.
But you can watch the video and... Because I had heard about it, I was like, surely it's not...
Real?
Yeah. it very much is.
That is something else, man. Jesus Christ.
Yep.
We should probably wrap this one up quick because I don't know if you can hear all the children screaming in your house, but I can hear all of the children screaming in your house.
They're not even in my house. Yeah.
Yeah.
Little pricks.
So.
And my windows are closed, would you imagine?
Imagine that.
So if anybody does hear screaming kids, they're the devil's spawn and they're actually outside my house, but they're actually loud enough that they're penetrating the fucking walls.
Yeah, we won't keep you in that note for too much longer, giving our unlimited opinions about Dick Bacon. Because I don't know what else to say, really, to be honest. There's nothing to say
because the end of that,
the story speaks for itself, we'll say.
Boggles the fucking mind.
Yeah, it's a lot. I say that a lot as well, but this one was really a lot. Fucking hell.
Fair whirlwind. I'm so glad I didn't do like a fucking H.H. Holmes. Like,
that was definitely
could traumatize the masses.
Definitely traumatized me anyway, that's for sure. I don't think next week is going to be nearly as traumatic as that.
I mean, with Bible John. We never know.
It's true. That is true. It could be very traumatic. Who knows?
We can hold out hope.
We can. We hope to continue the trauma train for as long as humanly possible.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yes, we will... We'll be back next week with more listener series and like I said, Bible Jam, we're just continuing with Scotland for good reason. And that's kind of it. That was a horrific story and I don't even want to think about it anymore. So we are going to move forward with positive vibes and negative tests. And in the meantime, always be a hypocrite. Don't forget to tense your ankles.
And join our club.
Yeah, we probably... talked enough for today and my god, I really need to piss so bad.
I can see you like jiggling.
It's been for like the last 40 minutes. It's been such a struggle.
You could have just went for a piss.
Oh, I was too into the story, man. I couldn't.
Don't forget to tense your ankles.
Don't forget to say the fucking catchphrase.
It's the pee.
It's the pee. It really is. I'm so close.